You're listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WLFP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
Good morning, world. I'm back to my general format here, and good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and our usual alignment of really thrilling guests. We have one on the line right now, Paula Disbrow, whose book is arresting, shall we say. Hello, Paula.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, it's called Cowgirl Cuisine.
That's right.
I think you're going to have to sort of ease us into this. How did you end up? You were living in New York. You've lived in Europe. You're a food writer and a chef.
That's right.
And you couldn't pass up an adventure.
That's right. I guess you could say I love extremes. You know, I grew up in small town Iowa, but I always knew I wanted to live in New York and be a writer. I spent 10 years in New York, and in between that time, I spent 2 years in Europe, just so I could have my hands on all the ingredients I was talking about and writing about. So I spent a year in the south of France and some time in an agriturismo in Tuscany, among other places, just kind of ongoing apprenticeships. But fast forward to 2001, I came to Texas Hill Country to write a story about a bakery in Fredericksburg. And while I was there, I also visited Hart & Hind, an emerging guest ranch. Long story short, while I was there, the chef quit, the owner offered me and my then-boyfriend, now husband, David Norman, the job to come down and run the ranch.
Oh, you're married. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
So you might say Cowgirl Cuisine started with a magazine assignment, and I ended up spending, you know, it was one of those life-changing jobs, and I spent 4 years on the ranch, and my cookbook memoir was born.
Well, I mean, it's absolutely fascinating, because it's not just a straight cookbook. I mean, it gives all of your experiences. I can't get past, you know, I mean, you seem to be much tougher than I would be, I'm sure. But I couldn't get past the scorpions. I mean, I never even thought of scorpions.
Scorpions were probably my toughest battle. Well, I did have to roll up my sleeves and get tough and adapt to the thorny and prickly side of ranch life if I wanted to stay. And, you know, it would have been great to just write a cookbook, but what I love about Cowgirl Cuisine is I was able to write about these adventures and the animals we raised and the local characters in little ranch vignettes between the chapters. And the story about scorpions is funny. I'll tell you that I was stung twice.
I know. I read it.
In the first 6 months at our house on the ranch, I saw 20 scorpions in 6 months, and they did almost push me over the edge, I'll admit to you. But somehow I kind of, you know, after I was stung the second time, I got used to it. I thought, okay, I can survive. It's not that big a deal.
Well, yeah. So now you had to go back to square one, and for example, shopping when you were out in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yes. Well, it was really important for me to prepare food that had a context, you know, that reflected the landscape around me and reflected some of the best flavors of Texas Hill Country. So that part was really easy. I decided to do all my shopping at the local market. The closest one was 30 miles away in Uvalde, Texas, and it was just a very well-stocked HEB supermarket. And I didn't know what to expect in terms of produce and other local ingredients, but I was really blown away. I mean, being 2 hours from the Mexican border, there were great chilies and tomatillas and interesting things I'd never cooked with, like fresh chamomile and piloncillo and the Mexican brown sugar. But also, that part of Hill Country is called the Winter Garden because of it's a great growing region. So there were great leafy greens and pumpkin and broccoli and all sorts of great produce, in addition to, of course, venison and quail and Texas beef and all those good things.
Now, Paula, say hello. We've just been joined by Carol Bloom. Hello,
Hi, Carol. Hi there.
Carol, we had Paula Disbrow of Cowboy Cuisine on the other line talking. Cowgirl Cuisine on the other line talking about how she vacated New York for a position in the middle of nowhere on a ranch in Texas.
Sounds like fun.
You know Carol, you said, Paula.
I certainly know of her, yes.
And we're going to be talking about, we're sharing the time segments, Carol, so just join in whenever you want, and the same with you, Paula.
Okay.
And we'll be talking in a little bit, we'll be talking to Carol about this extraordinary cookbook that, we'll talk about that in a minute here. It's called The Essential Baker, The Comprehensive, and believe me, this is comprehensive, Guide to Baking with Chocolate, Fruit, Nuts, Spices, and Other Ingredients.
Now, there is some common ground here, too, because it turns out that Paula's husband is a pastry chef.
Oh, really?
Yeah, actually, more of a bread baker.
Okay.
Yes,
all right.
He was a bread baker at Boulay Bakery in Danube for several years before we left New York.
Wow.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, now...
You guys may have crossed paths, Carol. He's been baking for about 20 years.
Well, bread is not one of my areas of specialty, to be honest with you. I concentrate more on desserts, pastries, and confections. And so I really haven't worked with bread or yeast in about 20 years.
Carol's book is meticulously detailed, but simple and straightforward. It's a very honest book. You don't have to think much. All you have to do is follow her directions. Is that correct?
Yes, and that was my intention. I wrote the recipes in a different type of style so that on the left-hand side of the page you have the ingredients, and then directly across from the ingredient is what you do with it. So it makes it really easy to follow and to not get lost in the typical recipe style where the ingredients are listed up above and then there's a paragraph format down below. And so my intention is that even someone with no experience could pick up this book and be very successful in whatever they chose to bake from it.
Yeah, I see what you do. So you don't just have the ingredients you have the ingredients required for each step.
That's right.
So each step of the way... It says, so when it says place the butter and cream cheese in a bowl of an electric stand mixer, on the left it says 8 ounces or 16 tablespoons or 2 sticks of unsalted butter and cream cheese, and that's all you need to think about.
That's right. But it's a good idea to read through any recipe before you do it to make sure you know what ingredients are needed and make sure you have those on hand.
Oh, of course.
And also, you know, to understand what you're going to be expected to do.
Gail Gand?
Yes, I do.
Well, I mean, you talk about praise. This is what she says about this book. Want to learn to bake? Buy just one book, this one. Having the Essential Baker is like having a lifetime of baking experience and teaching in your kitchen. Enough information and recipes to last any baker a lifetime.
Wow, that's quite a compliment.
Good.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was very nice of her. I appreciate that.
Now, Calgo Cuisine's got dessert recipes in it, too, though.
Yeah, now, am I right in describing this by your subtitle, Rustic Recipes and Cowgirl Adventures from a Texas Ranch?
That's right. Yes, the recipes kind of go through a typical day on the ranch. You know, we start with breakfast. And
which is big time breakfast.
Yeah, big hearty Western ranch breakfasts, you know, salsas, huevos rancheros, but also some baking, some great pumpkin seed muffins and blackberry blue corn muffins, nice rosemary and pear quick bread.
Oh, that I'd like to even try that. Actually.
It's nice. It's nice with tea in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But there are also soups and salads and, of course, hearty entrees and Texas-style side dishes. And then we do end with desserts and some lethal Texas-style libations.
Yeah, give me an example of that.
Of the libations?
The lethal ones. What is a lethal libation?
It's a dangerous one. For instance, a common road trip for us is to cross the border and go to Nuevo Laredo to a very famous old school bar called the Cadillac Bar. And they serve flawless margaritas, and that recipe is in the book. There are also watermelon margaritas, but also
prickly pear.
Prickly pear, which flourished on the ranch. It's
did you get near them?
Raspberry colored inside, and they have a really unique flavor.
I am a veteran prickly pear forager, ending up getting pricklies all over me that I would say probably never came out of my clothes in a washing machine for 6 months.
That's just it. They get into your dishcloth, don't they? They get everywhere.
Terrible.
I told her it was the wages of sin.
Exactly.
Foraging is a nice, polite way of saying taking them off somebody else's tree.
Where did you collect them?
Australia.
Out of somebody's garden.
But in a part of Australia that had similar climate. You know, if you say prickly pear, you know what kind of climate it was since you're in Texas.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Carol, back to you.
Mm-hmm.
How this is supposed to be a book that anybody could use.
That's right.
How do you indicate how difficult this recipe would be? Are you supposed to just figure it out from reading it?
Well, actually, you can tell pretty much by the length of a recipe. So a shorter recipe is going to be, you know, easier to accomplish. And I always recommend, you know, if someone has no experience with baking, that they read through, you know, the beginning parts of the book on basic ingredients and equipment and techniques, and then look through. And, you know, the way that this book is organized, too, is a bit different. It's organized by ingredients. So if you go to the market, say the farmer's market, and you have, you know, all these beautiful strawberries or raspberries that you've bought, and then you come home and say, okay, now I want to make a dessert with these. What do I do? You can look in the berries chapter and, you know,
there's
figure
chocolate.
Out what it is that you'd like to do. And so there's a lot of really easy things like muffins and scones and, you know, some cookies and things like that and loaf cakes. And then, you know, it moves on into other desserts that are more complex like tarts and pies and layer cakes, things like that.
What do you think is the most difficult of the dessert categories to execute?
I think probably the layer cakes are the most difficult. Not so much the baking of them, but more the assembly. People have trouble sometimes with, you know, splitting a cake into layers.
I just read something about how you get the layers even, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, I use a very long knife. That's one thing. And then I go very slowly. I teach people to go very slowly and to take the knife and to mark around the outside edge first, maybe going in as much as an inch, and then basically turn the cake against the knife rather than trying to saw the knife through the cake. So if you hold the knife steady and you turn the cake against it, then you'll get a very even cut that way.
Now, tell us about the photography.
Well, the photography, I've worked with this photographer before on a previous book of mine. Actually, it was my first book called Truffles, Candies, and Confections.
It's gorgeous, the photography.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, we did all the photography. I did all the baking and the styling for it. So we did all the photography in my home.
Wow.
And, it was fun. It was really fun.
And these are all real. The pictures are of
of
real. They're not mock-ups or
no, not at all. No. This is all real food.
Absolutely. You know, that's the trend now. I mean, you actually photograph. I mean, I remember when we did photo shoots for food, where I mean, you wouldn't touch anything because it would had hairspray on it and all kinds of things.
Yeah, we had a fascinating interview last week with Frank Stitt from Highlands Bar and Grill, and he said that they shot the photographs for his book by the season, and they actually photographed them in natural light in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So the light was autumn light, and the winter was winter light, and the recipes contained ingredients that were typical of that season. Now, Calgo Cuisine's got a rather wide variety of pictures in it.
It does. It's as much a lifestyle book as a cookbook, and in that way it truly was a Valentine to this very special chapter in my life.
In fact, I'm looking at page 282.
Well, I can guess.
Called Epilogue, and I can't quite figure out what's going on. Perhaps you'd like to explain.
This always comes up. It's a now, I guess, somewhat famous skinny dipping shot, and my photographer was Shelley Strazes, the fabulous photographer out of California, and this was both of our first book. And we both see things the same way. We love things that are funny and quirky, and we wanted the book to be very whimsical and joyful. And what do you do on a 5,300-acre ranch if you can't shed your clothes and skinny dip? And that was a part of ranch life. So there is a funny picture, and it's certainly meant to make people laugh. And I only would have placed that as the last picture in the book. I think I probably would have lost people if I had it up front.
Everybody's noticed it. I was just trying to think of whose review of
I was trying to I was trying to figure out if you were putting them on or taking them off.
coming off.
Oh, here's the one. I mean, one of my favorite people is Gabrielle Hamilton.
Yes.
And she says, finally, one book that has, between its two covers, a recipe for macho steaks, boozy margaritas, a gripping story about birthing large farm animals, and a great photo of the lingerie a cowgirl wears as she's taking it off. This is one-stop shopping.
No, it was sort of easy. You know, cowgirls have long had this sort of tongue-in-cheek, you know, sort of sexual persona, and I for one, love the 40s Varga girls, you know, the naughty cow girls.
Oh, right. I forgot about them.
And so Shelley and I, my photographer and I, just had a lot of fun doing stuff like that. And, you know, not too much, but it crept into the photos. And I think food is so sensual, and ranch life was a very sensual, you know, beautiful stripping down to nature, you know, literally and figuratively experience. So those pictures just sort of happen spontaneously. You have to amuse yourself in rural isolation.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, do you have anything to compare to that, Carol?
No, I'm afraid not. I just have beautiful pictures of food that'll make you want to make them and eat them.
No lingerie, sorry. Well, what are you two individually doing now? Carol, what are you doing?
Well, I'm working on promoting the book, of course. It just came out the beginning of April, and I'm actually working on another book for Wiley, but just getting started on that, so that'll be out in about 2 years.
What is it, the subject?
Well, again, it's desserts. It's desserts, but it's a much smaller book than this one. It's going to be a little bit more on the whimsical, kind of fun side.
And how long did it take you to write this one? You just said?
This one, well, you know, I've used a lot of the work or recipes, I should say, that I've developed over my almost 30 years in the field. But the actual process from the time I wrote the proposal until the book was published was 4 years.
Yeah,
so it took a while, yeah.
And that's tedious work. I mean.
But you have a long career in the pastry chef kitchen before
yes,
that.
Yes, I do. I do. I've trained in Europe and worked there, and I've worked at hotels and restaurants in the U.S.
You were at some place where we stayed once.
Yeah, the Stanford Court in San Francisco?
Oh, yeah, in San Francisco, yes. I worked there for a while.
Now that's now a Marriott. It probably wasn't when you and I think it's a Renaissance by Marriott right now.
Oh. Well, now, ladies, could you hold on a minute while we take a break and do some commercials?
Sure, of course.
Great. So, all right, we will take a break now.
T1 Internet access wasn't affordable to many companies as little as 2 years ago. Service providers were charging in the thousands of dollars, keeping the benefits of a T1 connection out of most companies' reach. ASP Station is now offering the faster and more reliable T1 service at a price significantly less than 2 years ago. The speed of a T1 for both sending and receiving data is simply amazing and will change the way your business runs indefinitely. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. Call ASP Station now for details, 412-661-6001, 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go, fast.
Call ASP Station now for details, 412-661-6001. That's 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go, fast.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Rita, the networking guy and host of Pittsburgh's most unique business show, Business in the Fast Lane. We're on every Saturday morning from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on The Edge, 1550 a.m. For the past 24 months, we've been bringing the best and the brightest into our studios to offer you ideas, advice, and real-world examples to help you grow your business. So save those honeydews for the afternoon and join me, Tom Rita, every Saturday morning from 12 to 1 on The Edge for Business in the Fast Lane, Pittsburgh's best kept secret.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and our two guests on the line, Carol Bloom and Paula Desbrow.
Let's not forget www.onthemenuradio.com.
Right, particularly important since we want to give the full titles of the books and the publishers. Why don't you do that, Peter?
Sure. Yeah, well, first of all, Paula Desbrow, Cowgirl Cuisine, Rustic Recipes and Cowgirl Adventures from a Texas Ranch.
And that's William Morrow, HarperCollins. That's on our webpage.
Yeah, available through the bookshelf section of On the Menu's homepage.
Right.
And then the other one is Carol, with an E on the end, Bloom,
and
published by Wiley. It's called The Essential Baker. It comes with a truss.
Because
it weighs in about 3 or 4 pounds. So it's good exercise just to hold it in your hand.
Now, we're asking Carol what specifically. We've discussed format. We've discussed ingredient organization. You mentioned, though, that people are interested in some of the ingredients which you think are up-and-comers, as you called them.
That's right, yes. Well, I've traveled, you know, I've been fortunate enough to travel in many parts of the world, and I've been to Australia a couple of times. And one of the ingredients that they use there that we have, but it's not as well used, is passion fruit. And
have you priced it up, by the way? And I guess Paula should. We lived in Australia, and, mm-hmm. and believe me, we did not have to spend $2.50 for a piece of for passion
fruit. Well, I used to pick them off. I had a passion fruit vine in my garden. I used to pick them off, and my cousin Richard actually produced. At maximum, he has a little farm in Tasmania, and the peak of his production, he produced 20,000 passion fruit.
Wow!
And his proceeds on them were a quarter apiece.
Oh boy, well, Well, it's true. They're not as abundant here as they are in Australia. But you can also buy passion fruit concentrate these days. And it makes it's a lot more cost effective, and it's a lot easier to use because, you know, you have to wait for passion fruit to get very wrinkly and ripen up. But that's one of the ingredients. Another is persimmons.
I love them.
Yeah, they're great in the fall. I also use quinces, and a lot of people aren't familiar with those, and pomegranates as well. So there are, you know, some new ingredients that aren't as well known, but they're fun to bake with, and they're certainly delicious.
A funny story for you, Carol. We were in Abruzzo in eastern Italy, staring at a tree with a fruit on it, and somebody told us the name, which didn't mean anything to us at all, and we looked at it, and we said, we know what that is.
It's a persimmon.
It's a persimmon.
Right.
But they said that all the people who had been to their farm, you know, like tourists, non-Italians, had no idea what this...
Yeah, they had no idea what it was.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Now
I want to know if her pavlova recipe is foolproof.
Actually, it is, because it was given to me by a friend who lived in both New Zealand and Australia for a while. So it's a real true pavlova, and yes, it's very easy to make.
Well, Anne tried to make it ever since the years she spent with us in Australia.
In Australia,
French recipe, and here it doesn't work nearly as well. We don't understand why.
And even a friend from Australia, whose husband's recipe it was, tried making that in Pittsburgh.
And it didn't work.
One of the guests at this luncheon or dinner, I can't remember which, said it was the first dessert where they had to really struggle at it with a knife and a fork.
Oh gee, well, it was very tough then.
Yeah, so we don't quite understand why that happened.
Well, it could have something to do with the humidity. It could be the oven temperature.
Humidity is my guess, but
yeah, there's lots of things. But what my recipe includes is a little bit of white vinegar, and that helps keep it tender.
That's in my recipe too.
Ah,
vinegar,
okay.
Absolutely.
So we'll have to try it again.
We'll try it.
Okay.
We'll try it again, and listeners, we'll report back on whether or not pavlova is worth trying.
And Carol, I also wanted to ask you, what do you think is the greatest mistake people starting out to bake make?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, I think that they don't follow the recipe. They, you know, or they try to substitute other ingredients, or they might skip a step. And so I always recommend, you know, make the recipe the first time through exactly the way it's written. And then you'll know, you know, how it should be and what to expect. So when you start to improvise, you can see whether or not, you know, your improvisations are working for you. Because if you don't know the basics, then, you know, it's hard to be able to improvise off of those.
Could I ask if there's some sort of mad resurgence of interest in home baked goods? Because I've had so many cookbooks across my desk lately.
Well, I think there is. You know, I think baking is a real comforting thing, and it's something you can really, you know, kind of focus on and forget about, you know, your everyday worries and problems. And you create something, you know, from your heart and from your hands, and you can share it with other people, and it makes them happy. So, yeah, I think that there is an interest. You know, and everybody's very busy these days. We don't all have time to, you know, cook an entire meal from scratch, you know, every day. But sometimes you can just go in the kitchen and, you know, bake a batch of muffins or cookies and feel very satisfied.
Well, now, are you in a kitchen now or not?
Right this minute?
No, I mean, are you totally into just writing cookbooks and not working in the kitchen right now?
That's right. Yeah, what I do now is I write and I teach, and I also do some spokesperson work.
Now, Paula, what are you up to, aside from inventing recipes at the spur of the moment?
Well, Hart and Hine, the ranch where I cooked, closed a year ago December, and my husband got a job with Whole Foods Corporate in Austin. So I'm based in Austin, but we have a ranch in the Nueces Canyon where we still have the menagerie of animals that I write about in my book. I am back to being mostly a writer, and lately I've been doing stuff for the New York Times magazine, and I'm also working on a new cookbook with a great chef from New Orleans, Donald Link.
Oh, yeah,
Sure.
Yeah, he's wonderful. He's a chef at Cochon, which was just nominated for a James Beard new restaurant of the year, and he's also the chef at Herb Saint. And
yes,
so I've got a lot of julienne and crawfish in my future.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. That sounds like great fun. Mm.
Listen, we're going to, Carol, we're going to have to claim your line.
Okay.
I don't know any. I just want to thank you so much for this wonderful cookbook.
Well, thank
which
you.
It has to be.
Having me on your show, I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, and please keep us in mind when your next cookbook comes out.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right, well, great to talk to you.
Yeah, and I'm going to get back to you if this pavlova doesn't work out.
Okay, super. All right, and I hope all your listeners out there have a great baking experience also.
I hope so, too. I think they will if they get this wonderful book.
Great.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, Paula, here's an intriguing thing. I'm on page 180. Now, did you really make up the smoky red hen recipe just because your friend Rob was coming to dinner?
You know, I really did. It was one of those sort of sudden, you don't throw together sudden dinner parties.
Oops, something happened here.
Our line went dead. Did the line go dead?
Huh, I don't know. What happened?
I don't know. Let's see if Paula calls right back.
Great.
This recipe is actually for rock Cornish hens.
Oh, that's good. We're always looking for rock Cornish hens.
With a dry rub of ancho chili, cumin, paprika, chipotle, chili, kosher salt, black pepper, allspice, sugar, olive oil, and goodness knows what.
That's good. Sounds
so we'll have to try that. But I'm fascinated because she said this friend Rob was coming over. He's a talented food writer and friend, and he just said he was tooling around and he invited himself to dinner.
Uh-huh.
So she made up a recipe on the spot that she was going to cook for that evening.
Yeah, I mean, that's not that easy. If you read this book, you realize that, you know, you have to be organized about shopping because you have to drive all that distance just to get to a store.
Yep.
And probably, you know, I mean, it's probably a limited supply in the store anyhow.
I think there must be a lot of quail available in that part of Texas. Maybe they grow them there because she has a sizable number of quail recipes in here, too.
I think you would get quail in Texas.
I would guess so. Although, you remember the funniest thing when we were in South Carolina, not on the quail subject, not the South Carolina subject, people down there told us that that was the state that produced more quail than any other in the country.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Well, anyhow, I don't know what happened to... Did we get her back?
Floyd is on the line.
Oh, okay. This has been an exciting show, hasn't it, Ed?
Yeah.
Hi, Floyd.
Yeah, we lost phone service to Austin, Texas. But Floyd Cardoz from New York. Hello, Floyd. How are you?
Very good, Peter. How are you?
Oh,
just
good.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, well, we'd had Paula Disbrow was in Austin, and somehow she got cut off, and she did Cowgirl Cuisine. And then we had on Carol Bloom. Everybody kind of called in at the wrong time, so we've been sort of backpedaling, as you say. But it's good to have you on the phone.
Happy to be back.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we may be seeing you soon, too, by the way.
In New York?
Yes, in New York.
Well, actually,
and then we'll see you in Pittsburgh.
Actually, in New York first. It's either Friday evening or Saturday evening upcoming. I'm not sure which.
We're in for the beards.
And somebody called Sasha from Union Square Hospitality Group is going to be trying to get in touch with you about that.
I hope you come in Friday.
Okay, well, I think it must be Friday.
Why?
Perhaps he's not going to be there on Saturday.
I'm not going to be there on Saturday. I'm taking my son to a baseball game on Saturday.
I will
double check and figure out which day it's supposed to be, and if not, I'll call Sasha and say, you got to make a change. I honestly don't remember, and I don't have the schedule with me.
But Floyd, what we're doing here now is basically congratulations on receiving this humanitarian award from Share Our Strength.
Thank you very, very much.
And we did have Debbie Shore on last week on the show. I asked her to explain what the organization does and so forth and so on, and we did that.
Okay.
And we talked about the new focus for the anti-hunger relief. But I wanted to ask you, what are your motivations? You've apparently thrown yourself full steam ahead into working for this organization.
I firmly believe that there are many ways you can give back. And what I found with Share Our Strength is they are going to and excuse my voice because I kind of lost it last week. Uh-huh. But they're going to one of the very basic human needs of feeding people.
Right.
And I think that is very important because hunger is so prevalent in this day and age, and not very many people are aware of it.
Isn't that scary? I mean, you just hardly would think of it. You get people on lists for billions. They earn billions and billions of dollars in hedge funds. And then who's looking after these little children who are going to bed hungry
every
night?
And the sad part about it is it's getting worse.
It's getting worse.
Yeah, it's sad. And, A, Share Our Strength brings focus to it. And B, it generates a fair amount of money to fund these programs.
Uh-huh.
And they use food to, generate, money for food, which is pretty cool.
It is cool. And now you're going to be in Pittsburgh for the Taste of the Nation.
Yeah.
Are you going to go around to the country, or how are you going to get that much time off?
No, I'm just going to go. I'm just doing this one.
Oh, okay. So we really are lucky.
And I'm going to do my New York one that I normally do.
Right.
Great. When is the New York one, by the way?
The New York one is on the 23rd, I think, of May. It's a week after.
Okay, great. So, listeners, I think what's the website? Is it Strength? It's www.strength.org, New York listeners or people living close to New York.
If you go to www.tasteofthenation.org,
okay,
you should have a link to all the websites.
That'll be
actually
great.
We're on it right now. So.
But you're going to be at two of them, May 16th in Pittsburgh, and then the following week in New York.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
How's it doing overall as an organization? Do you see any great shift?
I'm sorry, I didn't get
it's been going for a long time now, and it seems, lots of organizations hit a plateau, but they seem to be always refreshed and going in a stronger direction.
The great part about Share Our Strength is that they have so many awesome people working for them who are so dedicated and so into the cause that they're always so charged, So, and of course, Debbie and Billy Shore are just the most amazing people.
They're from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I know. And when I heard they were from Pittsburgh, that's when I decided to do it.
Oh, great.
Well, I have to say, we should inject this. You're actually hoping with a comeback this year. Because last year's Taste of the Nation event was on a very much smaller scale, and it was put together at the last minute. Prior to that, it had been a really big event, and we're trying our damnedest here in Pittsburgh and with the program to have people realize that it's such an important event, and the 2007 event's going to be special, and it'll get the energy back that it needs in order to be able to keep on fueling the organization with money, which is clearly as badly needed here as anywhere else.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Tell me what you're going to be doing. You're going to be signing your cookbook?
I'm going to be making a tasting of a dish, which would be shrimp balcha, which is a very traditional dish from the state where I grew up in India.
Oh, so you're cooking, too.
Yeah, I'm going to do one small taste.
Uh-huh.
And
you better
save
some of that for us.
And I'm also going to be signing my cookbook, One Spice, Two Spice.
Yes, which is, again, that's on our website, www.onthemenuradio.com, and you just click on the bookshelf, OTM bookshelf. And you can, everybody can order that cookbook, which is amazing, really amazing.
Yeah, new instructions also to search the page, so you don't have to go down through all the cookbooks. All you have to do is enter Floyd or Cardoz, and the book entry will come right up there for you.
All right. And how are you feeling about the James Beard Awards?
How am I feeling about the James Beard Awards? I try not to think about it.
Best Chef New York.
You know, it definitely is an honor to be nominated for the fourth time.
Right.
But, you know, New York City is such a wonderful city, and we have so many talented chefs.
Yeah. And how long have you been there?
I've been in New York now for 8.5 years.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's just amazing to be there with all these people and recognized by our peers. And, it's an honor.
Yeah. What did you think of New Orleans when you... That's where you accepted your Humanitarian of the Year award.
No, actually, I accepted that in Miami, South Beach, for the Food and Wine Festival. But it was based on a lot of the work that I had done with the... with fishermen and my feelings for, you know, what happened down there and how little we were doing as a country to make things better there. And, you know, when I saw what Shara Strength was doing and trying to, you know, generate interest in... and funds and passion and energy and commitment, I just felt that I had no choice but to sign up and add my little, you know, 2 cents bit in there so that we could make this a better country and make New Orleans a better city and help them, you know, pick up the pieces and go on.
Yeah, we were down there right after the Miami South Beach event, and the chefs down there are doing a tremendous amount. I mean, John Besh, I think, told
us... He's still feeding people.
Yeah, he said they're sending out about 1,500 meals every day.
Yeah, John Besh is an amazing, amazing guy, and what he's been through, passionate, he cares, and cares for a city. And when he has someone like that behind it, you know, it's great.
Yeah, he has a huge amount of energy. He always has a smile on his face. He always seems
and he has
like
four kids.
He's always having a good time.
He has four sons.
he now has 5 restaurants.
Yeah. Well, listen, you save your voice, Floyd.
Yep.
And so you can talk to us all when we see you at the awards, and also when you come to Pittsburgh. I look forward to trying your food again. I just love your food.
Thank you so much. You're very kind.
Yeah.
And
well,
I look forward
are.
To seeing you too.
Yeah, and let's tell them the story. We're a good luck charm, remember?
Yeah.
Last year, on the very day of the awards, we were at lunch at the Modern,
yeah.
And we told Chef Gabriel that he was, of course he was going to win, and he should see us after he won and do an interview, and he won.
Okay.
So we're going to make sure we're at Tabla on Friday.
Okay.
And we're going to invite you to do an interview with us after you win.
I would be honored.
All right. Thanks, Floyd.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very, very much.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Time to take a break.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding. An old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster to Heart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
It's Saturday. You and your wife take the boys to the mall, straight to the food court. Your wife and Pete head for tacos. You and Danny want Chinese. You look up at the menu for a few seconds. You look down to see what Danny wants. But you don't see Danny. Your eyes dart around frantically. You instinctively call out,
Danny! Danny!
From the taco place, you hear a voice.
Hey, Dad! Change my mind!
Every parent knows that feeling when, even for a few seconds, you lose sight of your child. Imagine if he or she were actually abducted. Go to wirelessamberalerts.org. Sign up for free Amber Alerts on your cell phone. When an Amber Alert is issued in the areas you've chosen, you'll receive a free text message. If you spot the vehicle, the suspect, or the child described in the alert, call 911. Sign up today at wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. This message brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WLFP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
Welcome back. You're listening to a particularly wild and woolly
Are we wild and woolly today?
It's been a whole bunch of excitement.
We've had scorpions and skinny dipping and pavlovas.
And dropped calls and all kinds of stuff.
And lost voices, laryngitis.
Yeah, we've had a little bit of everything.
And larceny of prickly pears. Boy, we have all kinds of. I think the statute of limitations has run out on that one, thank goodness.
Yeah, I think so. I just want to put in a final word. We already we had the opportunity to sign off on Carol Bloom's fabulous book, The Essential Baker, but I wanted to just put in another plug for Cowgirl Cuisine with Paula Disbrow. It's just warm and witty, and it just draws you into it. It's as much fun reading it as it is using it as a recipe book.
And it's got some truly fabulous recipes.
And it has fabulous recipes as well.
Some very wide-ranging stuff, a lot of things that can be converted to outdoors for cooking purposes.
Right.
And I'm sure they do that a lot.
It made me want to go to Texas. It's the first thing I've ever encountered that made me want to go to Texas.
Well, we had those nice chefs who wrote the cookbook from the Mexican restaurant in Austin.
Oh, that's right.
And they said you got to come down, so maybe we'll just come on down.
That sounds good to me.
But you all come back to New Orleans now, because last week's show, you'll recall, we introduced a couple of the chefs from the Windsor Court Hotel and the Grill Room, and we said we'll pick up the next time a fascinating interview with pastry chef Melissa Grimm, who has a story all of her own.
Melissa Grimm, who's pastry chef, executive pastry chef of the Windsor Court Hotel Grill. In England, everybody calls desserts when they're kids, they call them afters. Well, the way desserts are now, you can't call them afters. They are spectacular. First, tell us a little bit about your background, because you have a very interesting story. Where did you start? How did you get here?
Well, I grew up in a small town in Minnesota, and then I decided that there had to be more to life than meat and potatoes. So I headed out to New York for culinary school, did a little bit of traveling around, and finally settled on New Orleans just after the storm, coming from San Francisco. My fiance grew up here in New Orleans, and Before the storm, we had decided that New Orleans would be our new home. Katrina happened, we evaluated, but decided that we wanted to be part of the rebuilding. Everybody else was moving away, we were going to move here. And, you know, just proceed with our lives, get started over again. And that's when I decided, Windsor Court, here I come.
Why is it that women make such fantastic pastry chefs?
Patience. There's a real art and a science to pastry. A lot of people say they can cook, but they can't bake. When you cook, you can add a little bit of this, a shake of that, a dash of this, and, well, I don't like green peppers, so I'm going to substitute carrots. In baking, that doesn't work. If you think, oh, well, I don't want quite as much sugar, I'm going to leave some out, your recipe isn't going to work out. And the patience part, it takes time to bake. You can't just slap it together. So, you know, oftentimes women have that patience.
So everyone can sit listening to this and drool. Describe the desserts you produced last night.
Well, last night for you, we had our traditional New Orleans dish, which in our restaurant we do a Bananas Foster bread pudding. It's a banana bread pudding that we drenched with Bananas Foster sauce, caramelized bananas, house-made vanilla bean ice cream, and then we serve it with hot buttered rum because you can't come to New Orleans and not have rum. And so that pairs right along with the Bananas Foster. We also did our chocolate tasting, which is a milk chocolate creme brulee with Windsor cookies. It's a mocha milkshake with a dark chocolate straw, and then our warm chocolate fondant cake.
Now, you're obviously on top of all the new trends in desserts. You say individual desserts and also assortments of desserts. Is that where we are?
Definitely. I think everybody, you know, sometimes your eyes are bigger than your stomach. You can't order every dessert on the menu when they all sound so good. So the direction that a lot of pastry chefs are taking now are trios of desserts, samplings of desserts, things where you can try several different things, but only have, you know, one plate of dessert.
But your presentations were knock your socks off. You must spend a lot of time devising the presentations.
I like to create some sort of nostalgia with guests where they can connect to something, think back to a time in their life like, oh, this flavor reminds me of, or do you remember that place we went? This looks just like that. Things obviously have to taste good, but you want to see a dessert from across the room and somebody say, oh, I have to get that. So I always want to make sure that my desserts look really great.
And they certainly taste good, too. What do you see down the road? Get a crystal ball and predict what you think the next hot trend will be.
Wow. I definitely think in New Orleans that, especially with the rebuilding, everybody, we want a new, better New Orleans, but I think everybody is really trying to get back to the roots, back in, you know, really delving into the history. They want New Orleans to come back, but they want to keep it the way it used to be. So I think with the desserts, we're going to see a lot more table side and old kind of classical style desserts in a sort of modern, fresh sort of way. And I think we'll still continue on the individualized style of desserts, but you know, I think we'll be seeing more and more of the old classics that people, you know, remember from their childhood.
Will you stay in touch? And let us know what you're doing next. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, she's dynamite.
She makes the case for an all-dessert meal.
She's and what
you could, consider one, and just incredible. Just so matter of factly, she said Katrina happened, and we just decided we were going to come to New Orleans anyway.
Right,
it was just really unbelievable. She was just an absolutely dynamite person, a great interview, and backed up with really wonderful food. Like I said, go there, have an all dessert lunch or an all dessert dinner. Why not?
So what's next?
Well, we're going to cross the continent. Because we've covered San Diego. It's such a great destination. We've had somebody talk about that. A restaurant called Market, which is just north of San Diego, was a place that I visited several months ago. And I'm talking to the owner and founder of the restaurant. She owns this restaurant and another one.
On the menu, can't seem to get San Diego out of its itinerary. Peter's in San Diego again in the wintertime, lucky guy, and catching up with a wonderful new restaurant called the Market Restaurant and Bar, which is somewhere slightly north of San Diego. And I'm with the managing partner and joint owner, Terrell Gavry. Did I get that right?
Yes, he sure did. Gavry.
Okay, Terry Gavry. Tell me about this restaurant. It opened quite recently, I understand. Tell me about the opening and what it is you're trying to do here.
Well, Carla and I took over in July. We bought it from a good friend of ours, Sammy Ledecky. We were actually on a trip to L.A., a food trip. We were all going out to dinner, and Sammy was talking about the fact that he was thinking of selling Black Horse Grill and also Fresh in La Jolla. So quickly, I elbowed Carl and said, oh my God, that might be the place for us. You know, we were wiggling our eyes and kind of acting excited back there. And so when we got back, we called him up and asked him if he was serious about selling it, and he said he was. So we did a deal very quickly because the track season here in Del Mar starts July 15th. We actually closed escrow on July 14th and took over the very next day. Carl, we didn't know where the light switches were. We didn't know where the knives were kept. We didn't know anything, and we were the owners. So we walked in, introduced ourselves to the staff, and opened that night, the first night of the track, as Black Horse Grill. And we slowly morphed the restaurant into what it is today, and that's Market Restaurant and Bar.
So you knew Carl before. Now, Carl was at another property, right, before you opened here. Were you friends? Were you partners? How did you come to get together so quickly to open a restaurant?
I met Carl about 8 years ago. I was interviewing him. I also do a little food writing on the side, and I was interviewing him for a chef piece I was doing. And we just had such a common interest and love for the restaurant business, and our ideas were so similar that we talked a lot about if we ever were to open a place together, that we would love to do it if the opportunity ever arose. And that we became friends and we became eating buddies, and then the opportunity arose, and so we jumped on it.
That's great. So it was Black Horse Grill, but you morphed the food over towards Carl's own style and menu. So we haven't had dinner yet, so you're going to have to explain to our listeners, because I can't, because I don't know what we might be having for dinner tonight. So talk about style and then some of the dishes that you think might be in store for us.
Well, first of all, anyone who knows Carl knows that he is a real freak about freshness. And it killed him to actually be the chef at a restaurant where he wasn't in control of the menu. We ran the old Black Horse menu for only 3 nights. And if anyone knows anything about chefdom, it's very difficult to completely change an entire menu in 3 days. Carl, I kind of coin or call his food California Modern, kind of after the California Modern architecture. It's very clean. It's great lines, very pure, bright flavors, very unfussy. Carl goes daily to Chino's Farms, which is only about a mile from our restaurant. He also has fish flown in every day from all around the country. And whatever comes in that's freshest and whatever he sees at Chino's is how he molds and writes his menu for the evening. Our menu literally changes every night. If you ate here last night, right now, one of the soups is different. If you ate here 2 nights ago, you wouldn't even recognize 3 of our proteins on the menu. So every day, 3 or 4 of the dishes change, which also is very extraordinary to do that in this type of a restaurant.
Certainly sounds exciting. Now, what are some of the things that just might be in my future, do you think?
Well, I'm going to make sure that you start off with the Pinky Toe Crab Salad. Number one, because I love the name Pinky Toe Crab, and also because we just got in the Pinky Toes last week, and they're looking gorgeous. They're from Maine. Also tonight, the thing that I know I'm going to order, and I had this last night, but I'm one of those people that if I have something I love, I order it every single night until he takes it off the menu, and that's as a starter, the French onion and braised beef soup. He does these little teeny tiny homemade crostinis and puts our aged white cheddar on it, and then it gets all melty and gooey, and it's a really great twist on the traditional French onion soup. In the entree department, I think that you must, if you're only going to eat here one time this visit, you must have the beef short ribs. Carl is kind of known for them. He marinates them overnight, and then they have a really slow braise, and they're in the most delicious, succulent red wine sauce. And I think tonight he's serving them with choy sum. Oh, and his whipped onion potatoes. You can't go wrong there.
Sounds like that might be in my future. Now, we're going to resume again in just a second, but I'm just going to stop this track right here, I think, Terrell, and ask you to come back in just a moment and answer some more questions.
Well, it sounded like a big meal.
It was a big meal, I'm afraid. Rob Akins was there with me. Rob Akins from a good old friend, Rob Akins from Akinsbury.
Right.
He came. He was in San Diego, so he came along with us too. So we had several people to share things around.
Is her name Terry or Terrell?
Terrell, known as Terry, and she owns another restaurant in San Diego. I think we got around to talking about
that. She's not in Delmar?
She's this restaurant's in Delmar.
Okay.
And I think it's in a building that you and I went to as a restaurant before it was the Black Horse Grill, like 20-some years ago in San Diego.
I see.
But it's right where there's a big racetrack in Delmar. That's what she was referring to. They have a flat racing season that started the day that they took over the restaurant. Continue our conversation with Terrell Gavry at Market Restaurant. She reminds me that we didn't talk about Chef Carl Schroeder's background, and we also didn't talk about the wonderful remodeling they've done since they took over the restaurant. So, Terrell, away you go.
Well, for anyone who has been here when we were Black Horse Grill, like I said earlier, Carl and I operated for 3 months as Black Horse. All the while in the background, we were scheming on how we wanted the restaurant to look, how we wanted it to reflect Carl's food and be a little brighter and more casual. So we literally did, if any of you have ever watched that Extreme Makeover, we closed on a Monday night, and we opened up Friday night for service. So we spent Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday remodeling and opened up on Friday. We completely gutted and remodeled the entire interior of the restaurant. We did not do much to the kitchen, but we painted, redecorated. All of the booths are new, the tables are new, all of the artwork is new. We installed a 62-inch flat-screen television in our lounge area that actually has a closed-circuit camera into the kitchen so that people can look at Carl and his staff in there cooking. And for the ladies out there, Carl is very nice to look at, and he has quite a little following of women that come in and sit at the bar and want to look at him.
I think we're looking at him right now, are we not? See the one with the hat on?
No, actually, he is not wearing.
Oh, he's not wearing a hat. Okay, then we can't see him in the picture, I guess. So,
he's on the other side.
Oh, he's on the other side. Yeah. Okay, so we can't see Carl. But more about Carl's background. Before he didn't just drop from the sky and land in this restaurant to take over. He had a distinguished background before he got there. Tell us a little bit about that, Terrell.
He's a graduate from the Culinary Institute, and then he did his internship and spent a couple of years at Aqua. And then he was picked up by the Lark Creek Group, and he spent about 3.5 years working with them, and namely Bradley Ogden, and helped them open up most recently our Terra restaurant here in Del Mar. And he spent 2.5 years, actually 3 years, at our Terra in Del Mar before he ventured out to open this place with me.
Well, that's just terrific. Now, I think we're going to have a word with the wine man, if we can find him. But before we do that, I have to tell you, listeners, a story. Somebody told me about Terrell yesterday. It said Terrell's tall and blonde and frequently goes around wearing a waffle on her head. Now, she's not doing that right now, but that's because she owns another restaurant in downtown San Diego called
Cafe 222. And, you know, that was one of those. They say that in your lifetime you have one brilliant idea. That was probably my one brilliant idea. I posed with a waffle on my head in a very kind of sexy Chanel-ish gown, and we ran it as a billboard for a couple years, and I'm never going to live that down, but I love it.
Market Restaurant and Bar is just south of Del Mar, near the Del Mar racetrack. There's a website that people can find out all the details and probably make reservations, Terrell?
Right. It's www.marketdelmar.com, and you can make reservations on our website and also through opentable.com.
Thank you so much for talking to us, and we'll resume again when we can find the wine man. When in doubt, ask the man in charge. So we found the man in charge of wines at Market Restaurant. And his name is Brian Donegan, and he tells me he's 50% Irish and 50% Italian. And I said, which halves? And he didn't have an answer for that. But Brian, tell us about the focus of the wine program here.
Well, the wine program actually tends to focus on smaller producers, just because you go to so many restaurants and the wine lists almost look exactly the same. So we try and set ourselves apart by doing wines and wineries that are a little bit more up and coming. Some of the producers that have maybe made a name for themselves at another established winery and are now doing projects of their own, much like our executive chef and owner, Carl Schroeder. So that's typically what we look for.
Now, are they from California, from all U.S., from overseas? What markets do you choose from?
All over the world, wherever we find the best wines and the best values, typically. The list does have more of a focus, I'd say, towards California and U.S., and then varies into a little bit of French, a little bit of Spanish as well, with also a little touch of South African and Australia in there as well.
No Italian?
Right now, we're not doing Italian wines. We're looking for some that'll fit a lot with the flavors with Carl's food, but it's a small bone of contention with my family right now.
And no Irish wines either, but that's okay. That's also to be understood. Brian, thank you for talking to us.
My pleasure.
I mean, I have one question here. With a waffle on her head and in sexy lingerie, what was she selling?
Her restaurant.
Why? What does this waffle have to do with a restaurant?
It's a breakfast-only place.
Oh, see, that little piece of it was missing.
They specialize in waffles.
All right.
There's an unusual specialty. That's a good way to finish out a program.
All right. Well, I think that does
Maybe you should try wearing a waffle on your head. See you, listeners, same place, same time next week.
Bye-bye.
Jazzin' Around with David J. is next on The Edge, AM 1550.